Alan Kohler here, and I'm talking to Frank Poulas, who is the executive chairman of Magnus Energy Technologies. Started off with a graphite mine or deposit in Tanzania and is now building a battery plant in New York. And it's got the equipment sitting in a bubble wrap about 3 hours, 3.5 hours north of New York City. But it's they're just trying to get some money to build the factory. And that's apparently just around the corner, but we'll see. They've just raised $6 million last year, and so they've still got $5 million in the bank. So, look, it's close to happening or not. You know, this is the problem with something like this. This is a startup, this company. Potentially, they say they've got technology for fast charge, like 85% charge in 6 minutes. So they're talking up a storm, no doubt about it. They've got a battery about to be built by the end. They'll be in production by the end of this year, they say. But they've still got to get the funding. They're also looking to build a factory in Townsville, which they'll get money off the Queensland government and the Commonwealth government, they say. So, look, it's an interesting story, and here it is. Frank Poulas, who is the executive chairman of Magnus Energy Technologies. Frank, we always start these interviews by talking about cash. So tell us what your cash burn is at the moment.
Yeah, Alan, our cash burn currently is roughly $1.3 million per quarter. And we have a cash position currently at $5 million.
Yeah, right. So, and you raised a bit over $6 million last year, right?
That's correct. It was 7.65. I think it was roughly September that raising took place.
Do you have any prospect of getting some operating cash in before you need to raise some more?
That's the aim. So the project that we have in New York State, which is our flagship project and sort of the number one priority that we have in the company today, the plans are that is producing revenues by the end of the year, in saying that there's a last lot of funding, the last round that's required to bring this project into production, which we're in the final stages of completing.
Yeah, right. Okay. So I'll get to some specifics on that plan in a moment, but I just thought it'd be a good idea to get some history of this company going back, because as I understand, it used to be called Uranex. It was a uranium business. You offloaded the uranium assets 2012 and then found graphite in Tanzania. And in those days, you were a non-executive director, right?
That's correct, Alan. So I've been personally as a shareholder in the company in about 2 weeks' time, it'll be 15 years. So I've never held anything that long. I was pretty much there post the original IPO in 2005.
And you bought into it. You would have bought into it as a uranium play.
That's correct. So it was originally uranium, post Fukushima. The board took the position that uranium will take a long time to turn around, and we're probably starting to see that turn happening now. And it's been, you know, pretty much a good decade since that's happened. We were believers in, and, you know, have always been believers in clean energy, and we thought uranium was one of those sort of options. We then took the position that, you know, lithium-ion batteries would be, you know, the way of the future. We were trying to do deals in the graphite space at the time, not knowing that we actually had graphite on one of our tenements in Tanzania, which...
So that was originally a uranium tenement, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was picked. So the company at one stage had 15,000 square kilometres of tenements throughout the whole of Tanzania. They were the largest landowner in Tanzania. At the time, rents were very cheap. That all changed very quickly, and we literally had a position where just the rents were $3 million per year. So we went through a position post-Fukushima where we were assessing what was on our tenements. And that's, you know, north of Tanzania to south to east and west. But we asked the guys to keep an eye out for graphite. And as you have it, the last tenement that they were assessing was our natural tenement, and they found a large outcrop, and it sort of went from there. going forward then, we were doing a lot of work on processing our graphite. So we've got, uniquely with our graphite, we're able to produce a battery grade graphite.
But you did some offtake agreements with Sinosteel and someone else early on, didn't you?
Correct. And that was sort of for the lower end market products that we were selling to them. Whereas we, as a company, wanted to, you know, we had to somehow differentiate from the graphite players out there. And I think, you know, I'll go to it in a sec where, you know, that sort of thinking did work. So we knew we had something geologically that was unique, and thus we were trying to produce a battery grade products, and the batteries are sort of the fastest growing market for the graphite space, where we need we were able to produce a product that was high performing without any chemical and or thermal purification or any acids, heat treatment, whatever you have. And the reason being because China pretty much controls the battery market when it comes to the anode materials, purely because any natural graphite has to get chemically processed. And in order to do so, it's pretty much China that has the lax enough, you know, environmental laws that allows this to happen. But even they're cracking down on this these days. And the perfect example is Syrah's project or Syrah's project in Mozambique, producing this sort of 94 to 96, 97% concentrate that still needs the purification methods after it. And in order to do so, if it's going in the battery space, most probably it will have to go through China, and hence why they're looking at purification plants in the US now. In our case, we can produce this product in Tanzania without any purification, chemical, thermal. It's just a pure, clean crush and grind and float process that gives us a purification or a grade that is above that 99.5, 99.6 percent mark, which then allows us to do the extra steps to value add to the product with just mechanical processes only, that allows us to produce a product without any purification methods. So we were working with a group in the US by the name of C4V, and C4V was working with us on this method, and you know, we've got that method down pat, there's no issues there. But they also had some battery technologies that have been granted around the anode, but mostly around the cathode. And sort of thinking bigger, going back probably now 5 to 6 years, we thought, when you look at a lithium-ion battery, the majority, sort of the main cost is raw materials. We've got the mining background, and we've got, you know, background around, you know, processes. They had the technology. The sort of missing piece is sort of government relation and funding. Why don't we look at partnering up with someone who can help us in that aspect? And why don't we look at, you know, producing our own batteries ourselves?
But you could have just sold graphite and stuck with that, couldn't you?
We could have, but we just thought this market was in its infancy, and I still think, you know, we are still in early stages. But in saying that, we need to get a move on. And fast forwarding where we're at today, we have a factory in New York. We have the machinery to produce.
No, just before you do that, just go back a bit. So March 2018, you bought 10%. In C4V, which is the real name is Charge Triple CV.
Yes.
So you bought that 10%, but there was a broader deal you did with them at the same time, right? Tell us about that.
So at the time, we had purchased a lithium-ion battery plant off a group, well, actually off the bankruptcy courts in North Carolina. There was a group called Alevo, and Alevo was a new entrant in the battery space. They were producing these proprietary batteries that would go into a shipping container that would then sort of be used for energy storage and more grid applications.
What would be the size of the shipping container?
It is, yeah, be the size. So lots of little cells in a big shipping container, which could be used to stabilize the grid or you know, could go up against a solar plant or what have you. Now, the problem they had is they licensed a lot of their technology, but one of the pieces of technology they had was the electrolyte. When these batteries were going into these containers, after a little while, the electrolyte would start blowing up. So they started having some major issues, which then literally led to their demise and downfall.
Blowing up is definitely a major issue.
Of course, and not being able to sort of fund the repair of it, where the major shareholder decided to pull the pin on this plant. Now, the equipment that we purchased, whether they were making their batteries or we're making our batteries using different raw materials or Tesla's making their batteries, we're talking about the same machinery would be used for, you know, whoever it is, whoever the vendor is or the producer that is making these batteries. So we purchased this plant for $5 million US. Alan, 18 months prior, they had spent $210 million just on this equipment. And to take it, you know, a step forward, some of the machinery that they had purchased further down the track was so new that it hadn't even been put on the manufacturing line. Now, the machinery that we've purchased, its current models, and what we're out there doing right now. So maybe I'll just take a step back. We then moved this plant to New York State, where the government had provided us with a facility in a place called Huron Campus. Now, Huron is the birthplace of IBM. So IBM originated out of this campus, or what we would probably call a business park. We've been provided with one of the buildings in this business park that produced previously semiconductors and sort of circuit boards, high-tech manufacturing.
How far from New York City is it?
It's about 3.5 hours north, as in a drive, and it's more in a traditionally was a blue collar sort of manufacturing area, which the New York State government is now trying to reinvigorate.
What did you get the thing for free or low rent or something? Did you
very low rent, and the government also provided us with a funding package,
right?
Which has a couple of milestones and hurdles to hit, which we will hopefully be hitting in the near future once we secure our funding. But yeah, the government.
So you've picked up $200 million worth of equipment for $5 million and moved it to upstate New York.
That's correct, and the moving process pretty much costs, you know, close to as much as what the whole purchasing the whole plant. So that was to move it from North Carolina to New York.
And so was that before you bought the stake in C4V?
It was at the same time. Right. So C4V obviously were keen to participate and to provide funding towards the plant. And we thought from a Magnus point of view, we were keen into buying into C4V. And this was a perfect opportunity where we could buy our stake and the proceeds could help C4V in keeping a large stake in this New York battery plant.
So so they've got a stake in the battery plant as well, right? So have you got half of the plant or what? How does that work?
Four owners at the moment, Alan, and that's Magnus at roughly just over 53%. C4V is just over 45%, and then there's two groups, one called C&D Assembly. They make battery management systems. They own roughly 0.7 or 0.8 of a percent, and a group called Primet Precision Materials that produces cathode materials, and they own 0.7 of a percent. So they had larger stakes initially, but then through funding pieces, where Magnus and C4V have been putting funding into this project, they've been diluted out. So then if you look at indirectly with Magnus's 10% stake in C4V, that roughly takes us directly and indirectly at 58% of the project.
Right. And so where is this project at now?
So the project, we have the factory, we have the machinery in the factory. We've done all the engineering studies. We've done everything that's required to get us to a point where we've got fixed prices on, you know, putting the equipment back together and so on. But in short, the equipment's in the plant, bubble wrapped, and there is we're trying to complete this last stage of funding, which will then allow us to put the plant back together, hire the team that we've identified. We've brought a few members of that team already on board, and then pay for the first 12 months of raw materials for our production. So it's roughly a $40 million piece, Alan. And once that is in, we're roughly 9 months away from production. As I sit today talking to you, I believe within the next 4 weeks, we will have this funding piece completed, which will then allow us to produce these batteries by the end of this year. And Alan, this would be the second largest plant in the US and in the top 10 plants in the world. So we're talking about a significant plant. It's not some, you know, small plant. It's at gigawatt scale. And if you look at other sort of battery peers in this space who are at that level, there's sort of this rule of thumb currently, and we know this market's hot right now, where for every gigawatt hour of production that you have today, we can't compare ourselves because we're not in production today. But for those who are in production, there's roughly this $5 billion US per gigawatt hour in valuation of gigawatt hour of battery production. That's where we plan to be, and we believe we're on track to be producing at that level.
At what level?
At gigawatt scale. So obviously,
so what, a gigawatt hour of production?
Gigawatt hour of production. We will obviously start and work our way up, and within 9 months we believe we'll be producing a gigawatt scale, but we plan to start that production by the end of this year. So we're not talking about revenues 4 years away or 3 years away, like, you know, a lot of these sort of lithium producers or, you know, medium-term lithium producers who have got, you know, billion-dollar market caps right now. We will literally be in production by the end of the year, and we're talking at gigawatt scale and have revenues coming through the door.
So you're saying you only need US $40 million for that?
That's correct.
So what sort of funding will it be? Is it equity or debt or a combination?
I think it'll be a combination, Alan, and the majority will be in equity. The challenges we've faced to date with our funding is purely when you look at, we went down the track of trying to get as much debt as possible. And the challenge we face is we're not manufacturing these batteries right now at high scale. And we don't have sort of the brand where we're.
No, you've just got a factory in bubble wrap.
That's exactly it. So we're a startup, and being a startup, anyone who's started their business understands the challenges that we face. Obviously, with the market and the actual heat in there and the interest in the market right now, it's brought in a lot of, you know, potential equity investors, and we would expect when we announce our funding package, the majority will be in equity. And as we're going, as I'm speaking to you, I think there's going to be sort of at least one marquee name who will be coming in as one of these equity investors, someone who will be using these batteries and will be an off-taker of ours as well.
So what sort of batteries are you going to make?
So two main markets that we're targeting, energy storage and the transportation or sort of the auto industry. We already have, Alan, over 10 offtake agreements that are binding to date. So we've sort of some of the things we've...
So are they offtake agreements for batteries or for graphite?
So the offtake agreements that we have, Alan, are for batteries. And we have our sort of what we call our R&D facility in Binghamton University in upstate New York. And in that facility, C4V is one of seven private companies that are based out of there. And they have a $300 million battery facility that was funded by the Department of Energy. And obviously, the university works with a couple of private entities to try to promote not only business in the area, but also R&D. And out of that facility, one of the Magnus directors in Professor Stanley Whittingham is based out of that university. And I'm sure most out there will be familiar with Professor Whittingham. He was the original inventor of the lithium-ion battery and roughly 14 months ago was awarded with the Nobel Prize in chemistry for the invention of the lithium-ion battery. So he sits on the board of Magnus, but he's based out of that university. So today, our offtakes, getting samples and getting our batteries qualified, have mainly come out of the facility at the university. And we also have, Alan, we've also got live battery packs in products today. So there's a group called Martech, which is based out of Florida. They produce products mainly for the US and British governments, and they produce these unmanned boats or submarines and unmanned vehicles, mainly for surveillance purposes, and they have our battery packs in their products right now. And these boats will go out on missions.
But I thought you were, I thought you hadn't made any batteries yet.
No, so to get these offtakes, you've got to go through a long qualification process. And we've gone through, not only through this qualification with process with Martech, we've actually got live battery packs in their products. What I'm saying, though, we haven't produced out of our New York battery plant because it's bubble wrapped, but we've been able to use the facilities at the university to make smaller quantities of batteries, which are in live products today. So we
right.
can't.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But we're talking about the university's battery plant is sort of at 50 to 60 megawatt hour scale. We're talking about our plant is at gigawatt scale. So, you know, more than 20 times the amount that they're able to produce. So it's mass production, whereas that is sort of smaller scale production, more for R&D and research facilities, but it allows us to get our samples out there, which then has allowed us to get these offtake agreements. So it's, and then when we mention energy storage and the EV market, typically you will not get contracts from EV providers or from auto manufacturers unless you're mass producing. And the perfect example of that was the CEO of Volkswagen about 8 months ago at a conference came out and said, you know, if you're at gigawatt scale production and you're not talking to us, come to us. We need to speak to everyone who's at gigawatt scale production. Now, we're speaking to a lot of these and all the major automakers and working on programs with them, but you won't get offtake agreements, as far as we're aware, unless you're actually in production.
And yeah, right. Fair enough. You're also, aren't you also saying that your batteries are going to be fast charged, like 10 minutes or something?
So we're working on this fast charging technology, Alan, which gives an 85% charge within 6 minutes. Now, we've gone down the path of cycling this battery, and we were using these unoptimized cells. We've then taken it now to the next stage, which is using commercial grade optimized cells, and we're going through the cycling now. We're also working on a program with the New York State government where we're providing the battery packs. BAE Systems, so BAE, the British company who's pretty much known more for defense and satellite capabilities, they are also a large bus producer, which most people wouldn't know. They have a facility in upstate New York, close to where we are, and near us in here on campus. So they'll be providing the buses. We'll be providing the battery packs, and Con Edison, which is the largest power producer in New York, will be providing the charging facilities. So we're working on this demonstration program to prove to the New York State government that we can use this fast charging technology on transit buses. And the aim for the New York State government is that they go to an all-electric bus fleet. And the thing that's lacking, that if they could do it today, they would do it today. But the charging is the main issue. And we believe we're onto something, Alan, but with all these technologies, as you'd be aware, there's a long process of commercializing a technology. And to give you an example, with the batteries we use, say, in Martech's products, in order to go to the point that we're at right now and putting these battery packs and having the technology commercialized, patented, and so on, it's roughly a 10-year process. So when you hear of a lot of these new technologies, or you know, such and such, or a certain university or certain companies, you know, believes they've come up with some kind of invention and so on, to go down the path of getting it patented and commercialized, you're talking at least 5 years minimum. And we've gone down that path where not only have we got commercialized technology with our partners at Charge Triple CV or C4V, we've actually got the machinery and equipment to mass produce this. And I think that's something that's lost in the local market. If you look at, and I'll give you an example of how tight the market is right now. You may have seen one of our recent announcements where we're looking at, or we're working together with the largest abattoir in the Southern Hemisphere and the New South Wales State Government, where we're looking at putting a battery on that abattoir, and they're going down the path of looking at solar and other initiatives, and they're trying to, you know, get off the grid as much as possible, or you know, bring down their power costs because they generate a lot of power in an abattoir. Now, we will be using someone else's cells in this process because our New York battery plant won't be up and running in time for this project. The quickest lead time we can get to purchase cells, and when we look at cell manufacturers, there's six major makers that produce 90% of the world's lithium-ion battery cells, being Tesla, Panasonic, in Korea, LG and Samsung, and CATL and BYD in China. The quickest lead time we can get is 4 to 5 months. But that's how short, that's the amount of the shortage there is in the marketplace. You've had Jaguar, Daimler, and we've also, I'm just forgetting the third name.
It doesn't matter. So when are you going to be in production?
So by the end of the year. And, right. And these major auto manufacturers are all coming out. Sorry, it was Audi, Jaguar and Daimler have come out saying some of their electric models have been delayed purely because they can't get their hands on these cells. Even though they've got these huge contracts with groups like LG and Samsung and Panasonic, they cannot make these things quick enough, and they're building plants all over the place right now, especially in Europe and in Asia. And in our case, we believe the US market is a great market for us purely because, you know, they're focused on manufacturing products within their country, US-made products. We have a supply chain, as far as we know, that will be the only supply chain in the marketplace that has no China influence. And we're looking at bringing that locally to Australia as well, where we've completed a feasibility study for our Townsville project, and we're working very closely with the Queensland government in materialising this project and, you know, bringing
Tell us about the Townsville. You're going to make batteries in Townsville too, are you?
Yeah, that's the aim, Alan, and we're talking about starting off at 6 gigawatt hours and then moving that on to 12 to 18 gigawatt hours. We believe the Australian market is large enough, and we believe it's a great location also to some of the countries in Southeast Asia as well.
Is the Queensland government going to give you money?
So to date, they've funded the feasibility study that has been completed. We're looking and speaking to not only the Queensland state government, but also the federal government of Australia as well. There's applications government applications that need batteries. And at the moment, the majority of the world, not only Australia, is reliant on mainly Chinese battery manufacturers. And I think for some of the sort of sensitive applications that are used in government practices, it would make sense that Australian-made batteries are being used with technology that has been developed, co-developed by not only us but by our partners overseas. And our partner in C4V is also in this project, has an interest in this project in Australia as well. So
I presume this, with the Townsville one, you have to pay full freight for the machinery. You can't pick it up off a receiver or a liquidator for $5 million.
No, that's a one-off, Alan, and we'll never get that again. But the beauty from our case is we get the New York battery plant going towards production. We're demonstrating that we can mass produce these batteries. I don't think there'd be any bank or any fund in the world who wouldn't fund a project locally. Just the same as if Tesla was to build something locally here in Australia, I don't think they would have much trouble. I suppose with their market cap, they wouldn't have any trouble at all, but I'm sure they wouldn't have any trouble with getting funding out there. And we think by getting our New York battery project up and running, that will help us to get funding and exercise, you know, the confidence not only to end users but also to governments and all stakeholders that were able to do this at mass scale. And that's the aim. And New York being so close to production is sort of that perfect segment into our Townsville project here in Australia as well. So they're the two main markets that we're focusing on, Australia and the US market.
Yeah, but obviously the Townsville project is a little further away.
Correct. And New York, and hence why New York's that focus, because it brings those revenues in the short term as well.
So what's happening with Tanzania and your graphite deposit there? Have you been building the mine?
So the project is shovel ready, Alan. So we've got all the mining and environmental approvals. We've bought out all the landowners, gone through this compensation process. It's literally ready to go, but requires funding for the project. So we've got a team over there who's working very hard, mainly on the financing side and on the offtake side at the moment. But being so close to revenues with New York, that's obviously first and foremost for the company as the main priority. Is New York, but obviously we've got a high quality project in Tanzania, and that's something that we would, you know, love to sort of get up and running as soon as possible. And with the interest that's come towards battery material stocks at the moment and looking at non-China supply, we have been getting a lot of interest coming in the last few months, which we weren't getting prior to that. So it's something there in the background that we sort of call our sort of sleeping giant. But in saying that, New York is sort of, you know, the main focus for us.
Yep. All right. Very good. Well, it's been fascinating talking to you, Frank. Thanks.
Yeah, and I really appreciate your time, Alan.
That was Frank Poulos, who is the executive chairman of Magnus Energy Technologies.